Hey, let's do it.
Are we recording?
I'm recording.
Oh, look at this. Welcome back. We're back at it. This is the Patrick Podcast. Thanks for listening. Patrick here, and I am currently in Chicago. That's what's up, everybody. I'm at Lollapalooza.
Yeah.
But we wanted to get back to releasing interview episodes and quotes and pop culture and interviews. It's just time to get back in the rhythm, people. I hope you've enjoyed all of the homilies, the poems of this month. It's been a lot of fun. But today, we're going to hear from my friend, Mike Christie. Now, Mike is a cool dude. Mike is a pastor. He's an author. He is an amazing guy that I think you're really going to enjoy the conversation that we had. I guess it's been a few weeks ago. But yeah, we decided that since today is our first ever phone interview, that we would do a phone intro. we deliberately decided on doing that.
Yeah, this was totally planned.
Totally planned. No, this is not. Oh, we planned this to a T. But no. So I hope you guys enjoy, and ladies, enjoy the episode today. If you haven't already, like and subscribe to the podcast and share it with all of your friends, family, coworkers, etc. But yeah, I think that's it. I need to get out of here. We need to get going. Ben.
Yeah.
What's up?
Not much. I was just gonna, I think season two, it's gonna be new music in Nashville. Here's some new music that's come out in Nashville. I'm just going to list off a bunch real fast because it's been a busy summer. A lot of music this summer. So new music from Shane T, Future Crib, Frau, Pacific, Lava Goals, Nordista Freeze, Z Swan, S. Graham Parker, and Sucre. A lot of good music.
Yeah. Wow. New music.
Nashville. All Nashville.
Those are all Nashville people.
All Nashville people.
We should probably have some of them on the show.
We should.
We'll try to do that. Okay, folks. Hey, enjoy the episode. We'll see you soon. No, I guess I don't see you. You hear me? Let's just start. Peace.
Mike.
Patrick.
What's up, man?
Nothing much. Just sitting in a sweltering upstairs in Spokane, Washington, soaking it in. What are you up to?
So, you know, just here in Nashville, doing the things. But hey, yes, it is humid in Nashville. I think that is, honestly, our middle name is Humid Pedal Tavern Scooterville.
Nashville Humid Tennessee.
It's a good name. Scooter. Sure.
Kind of get stuck in the middle though. Sloppy humidity.
I don't know if I like that word.
Sloppy Nashville. Oh, that could be
no,
the middle.
No, I know. See, we've already, you're bringing your out of town logic to our in town sensibilities.
Oh, man.
So I'm glad that you're here on the show.
I'm glad to be on the show.
So, man, it's going to be interesting to figure out how to really dive in to this conversation. Right. But Mike, do you mind sharing your age?
I do not mind. I am 24 years old.
So you're 24, right?
Yep.
You have written and published a book. You are a local pastor. leading a church in Spokane, Washington. You're married.
Yep. Bingo. 3 for 3.
And you have a dog.
Yeah.
Which is clearly the pathway to children.
Oh, man. Don't go there. Precautions. There's no birth control for dogs.
So, like, that's a lot of things to have accomplished by 24.
Thanks.
You've made a lot of people feel like, oh, shoot. What am I doing? He's written.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. Get out there and do some stuff.
That's very kind of you.
No, so,
always good with an intro.
Yeah, good. So the roasting is coming soon. Don't worry.
Fantastic.
But seriously, like how, I guess in some ways, like take me to 16, 17-year-old Mike sitting in Midwest in Michigan. Right? You're from Michigan. And does 16, 17-year-old Mike, like, is he thinking, looking, if he could see 24-year-old Mike, is he like, whoa, like, this is everything I thought we would do and more? Or is he like, what? We live where? We've done what? Like, yeah, take me there. Take us there. Yeah.
I am more than willing. I don't know. I don't know what 17-year-old Mike would think. I think 17-year-old Mike kind of figured the Northwest was a given at some point. So I grew up just north of Detroit, spent most of my life there in a town called Royal Oak, Michigan.
Let's go.
Yeah, exactly. Spent 9 months, two different times in Texas, once at 3 and once at like 14 or something. But around like the age of, gosh, however old you are in fifth grade, I would come home from school every single day and I would plop myself in front of the computer and I would go on Google Earth and I would explore the world.
Wow.
And I found a bunch of Pacific islands and I made my way up from the islands and I found the Pacific Northwest and I found Washington and became obsessed with it and told my parents as a fifth grader that I would live there someday. And then my jeans got tighter and my music tastes more eclectic and pretentious. And now here I am, soaking it up.
Wow. So, I mean, do you remember, like, what was it about the Pacific Northwest that just, like, what was it? Was it just simply the environment, the trees, the, like, what? I mean, because you live in, you know, you live from the Midwest. So Midwest is beautiful. You know, there's some beauty there. You're from Michigan, so you got lots of lakes. And so what was it that kind of sparked your, was it a cultural thing? Like, you know, like I've heard that, you know, things are just more progressive on the, in the Pacific Northwest. Like what was
fifth,
like,
grade Mike?
Yeah. Is he really thinking, like, what is fifth grade Mike thinking of, like, this is it? Like, that's versus like Florida, you know, or something else that might seem more natural for you.
Yeah, that's a cool question. I think a lot of it had to do simply with the reality of elevation change.
So the Midwest
is the Midwest is super beautiful, but it's pretty flat. And I think growing up, you have that question: would you rather live
in the
mountains or on the beach?
And yes.
Little Mike knew all about the beach. He knew all about beaches.
That's right.
But he did not know anything about elevation change. So you throw a mountain in the mix and then you just pack up and move away from your family.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think that was part of it. And then I don't really know. I think I also grew up like obsessed with, a lot of fantasy books as a young kid, Inkheart, Chronicles of Narnia, all that good stuff. And you look at a place on a map and you see mountain ranges and you see rivers and you see oceans and you're like, man, that's like a real version of these places that my mind likes to escape to. And then obviously you get there and it's not all that, but there's just that allure of something a little bit more interesting than what you're accustomed to.
So, before we get too deep into like family of origin, family stuff, whatever, I guess it would be, it would serve us well to let everyone know exactly how we got connected, which is
LinkedIn. It's so crazy.
LinkedIn, man. The group chats and LinkedIn. Really?
We connected and gosh, haven't looked back since. I swear by it.
Yeah. Who knew? Who knew? Who knew? We didn't, but now we do. Now we do. No. So I mean, how do we even want to tell the story? I feel like you're gonna be better with the details. I just know like remember big things. I don't remember like dates and like all of that too well.
Yeah.
So right.
Well, I have it written on my wall, so
it's in my journal that I look at often.
It's true. Whenever I'm feeling sad and alone, I think back to the moment that I saw Patrick Chappelle, who the first 2 years of my knowledge of him was Patrick Chappell, but we don't need to talk about that.
That's fine. It happens. But fair. Yeah, so it was in Laguna Beach.
Right.
The year was... What year was that?
That was 2015. I think it's 2015.
2015. Which is funny because I listened to a podcast from that same conference we both were at.
Yeah.
One of the folks was one of the speakers that we'll get to in a minute. And then the other person was just attending and was there with us that we didn't even realize that they were there at the time. But, so yeah, it was 2015, Laguna Beach. We were both there for a conference that was, it was led by Richard Rohr and Rob Bell. Correct?
Yes.
Yep.
Correct.
And so that's kind of how it, and it was over, it was at like that random restaurant, very healthy, very Laguna, California type restaurant where a meal was shared and connection was made. And a friendship kind of started. What do you remember from that initial meeting conference? So it still stands out for you, at least.
The moment I remember was that I had been spending a fair amount of my time with a 74-year-old woman named Deanne. That's typically where you'll find me talking to grandma-like figures.
I'm just drawn to them. I'm just
naturally. I can't help myself. Deanne was a wonderful woman, and Deanne and I were having a great conversation. But Deanne, she was going to go get lunch with some of her friends, and she didn't invite me along.
Oh wow!
So I, like Michael Cera in Arrested Development, sucked my way out to the food trucks. And amidst the food trucks, I struck up a conversation with a lovely couple from Minnesota.
Yeah.
And between their accents, I'm like, man, I'm in California. I already say hockey in a weird way, and so do these people. And then my ears pick up on the slightest Southern drawl.
Oh, yeah.
And I turn around, and there's this alluring creature. Patrick.
Creature.
Yeah, no.
That's good.
Trying to do some favors.
That's good.
And lo and behold, this creature had a name, and that name was Patrick Chappell. I think we struck up a conversation, and I was eating a burrito or something. I could totally be misremembering this.
No, I think this sounds right.
Yeah, and then I was like, well... You know, people closer to my age are good to connect with. Deanne has her cronies. I'm going to try and latch onto this guy. So we sat together, I think. You invited me to go get some food. I think it was you, me, and Stratton.
Yep,
and
that's right.
There's some other guy from Australia.
Yeah,
and I can't remember his name.
And it was us.
And that became a crew. And then you... Right. And you all like went out and had fun and got drinks, and I was still 20. So I just walked alone to my hotel room and got a Pazookie on the way back from BJ's and listened to some Death Cab on my balcony and cried myself to sleep.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah. Right.
What a perfect day for you.
It was great. So wonderful.
Yeah.
All
so
the
then
pieces aligned.
And we stay connected because that is one of my character. I don't know if it's a good character, a good part of my character or what, but I do not easily let go of connections when I make them, especially when they live in different places than where I live. Cause I'm like, who knows? I may end up in that space again. And I like having friends in other parts of the country and the world. So you, and I kind of stayed in touch and chatted and just really made a good connection. So much so that I was the DJ at your wedding.
I know, right?
Yes.
Why?
I don't know. But I was.
Right. Well, I think I'm the same way. I don't know what it is. Like, I'm pretty bad at maintaining, like, real deep friendships.
Right.
I don't know what that's about. 4 middle schools in 3 years. Maybe there's some psychology there.
Oh, nice. But, deep diving. I like it.
Deep diving. The deepest of dives. But I think... Yeah, so you and I had remained connected, and I feel like we'd talk, I don't know, every 4 to 6 months, just shoot a text, see what the other was thinking about.
Yeah.
And then Emily and I got engaged, planning our wedding, and we're trying to figure out, like, playlist, DJ, what do we want to do? I knew you DJed weddings. I'm like, I really want Patrick at the wedding, which is weird, because we spent 2 days hanging out, but I really like Patrick. So I talked to Emily. I'm like, what if we see if Patrick would DJ the wedding if we bought like a plane ticket and had him come out here? And lo and behold, it happened.
It happened.
And you got to watch me cry myself to sleep from drinking too much Jameson.
Yeah, that was an epic night for you.
It was so shout out Jack Rogers and Jimmy Skelton.
Oh man, those guys. Those guys are from a comic book or a TV.
So
like
great.
They are just perfect in every sense of the way of like
the best story from that weekend, honestly, is those two got out early and they rented a car and went out to Mount Rainier. And I guess they were there for only 36 hours. And Jimmy said he woke up in the middle, like in the morning, to a rustling amidst the fast food wrappers, only to discover that there was a mouse living in their rental car after 36 hours. Which, oh man, perfect.
Oh, they're great. Shout out to those guys. I love those guys.
Absolutely.
So, okay. So we gave you all a little backstory as to how we've come to know each other. But yeah, I really want to spend at least a little time talking about how, I mean, I don't know which direction you want to go in first, but maybe we talk about your book. So you wrote this book.
Yeah.
And I was supposed to write a forward for this book.
And still an open invitation.
Forward still pending.
So that's why it's at a reduced rate on Amazon right now. Get on it while you can.
I bought the book. It said a forward from Patrick Chappelle. I have not seen this forward. Yeah, we'll send it out to everybody.
Yeah, maybe you can do the Audible book.
I'll do the Audible book. Yeah,
that would be great.
That would be wonderful. So I guess like walk us through... Here you are. I mean, how old are you when you complete when you finally hit send, done, complete with the book? You're what, 22 or 3? Like, or
23. It was just celebrated a year of being out on, just a few weeks ago.
So what was the push for you as a 22, 23 year old to say, okay, I have this idea for a book. I want to write this book. I think this is work that's within me to do. So here I go. And kind of, just walk us through that journey for you and even kind of what, you don't have to give all the details of the book or what's in it, but we want people to pick it up and buy it. But kind of share with us why, why a book and why at that point in your life?
Yeah. I think really what it began as, you sort of hit it. at the beginning, but like I've been going through a lot of transition in my life, and I was I got married right out of college. So you have two insanely huge life shifts that are happening simultaneously. And I had some free time because I was unemployed at the moment. And my wife is the sugar mama in the relationship. She's a nurse.
Nice.
So I was teaching high school English part-time, like a homeschool co-op. And I found that I had a lot of time on my hands. And I knew that like the past 5 years, there had been so much that had been happening just in my own spiritual life. I just wanted to be able to sit down and piece that all together. Moments from, just the shift from Michigan to the Northwest, went to a pretty conservative Christian school for a year, rebelled pretty heavily against that. And I think I'd been reading, you know, people like Rachel Held Evans, and Rob Bell and Richard Rohr and just all these different names who were really helping me build up a theory for reworking my faith. But the one thing that I felt was maybe missing a little bit in all that was just, okay, what does that look like to actually sift through that yourself?
Right.
So for me, it began as like a super personal thing. It was more just a journal of documenting what does this process look like? What are some of the moments that have been really pivotal? What are some of the moments that have been really hard? What are some of the more comical moments where I made meaning from just kind of ridiculous things like cutting my head open from a car door? I wanted to be able to have that to like look back on and be like, well, this is initially the title was Through 22, which seemed a little bit ridiculous, but it was just like, this is what's happened so far. Like if I'm going to break my life up into hopefully knock on wood quarters, this is roughly the first quarter of my life. And I want to be able to have that to look back on. And the more I was writing, the more words came to me and I'm like, well, if this is at the length that it's at, it could be a book. There's no reason for it to just kind of sit in my computer and collect dust. And so really it's just a vulnerable attempt at me trying to explain what it looks like to go through some deconstruction of your faith and hopefully at the end move towards a place of reconstruction, at least a bit.
Yeah, I guess so. Even, okay, I have two questions kind of surrounding this is, I'm going to come back to the other one, but I want to ask, so here you are, you grew up in this Midwestern family. Is there someone in your family or someone that you looked at as a mentor that you saw them, because you basically you created this thing, so whether it's an artist, whether it's an entrepreneur, like was there some what was the water, I guess, you were brought up in that said, yeah, of course I can write a book. Of course I can get it published. Of course, like I can do this thing. It's like so many people grow up in where like that's not the case. It's like, no. You work a job somewhere, you do this thing, and to do that, we would never do something like that. No one from our family, you know. So was there... what do you feel like you got this kind of energy, this, you know, this drive to say, I'm going to not only have this dream to create and produce something, but I'm going to like do it.
Yeah. Well, like anything, it's just such a grab bag. Like there are all these different pieces that play into it and kind of filter themselves into, just who we become.
Right.
My mom was a bit of a rebel rouser. She worked at a Catholic church as a school teacher, and she grew up Catholic her whole life, as did my dad. Pretty culturally Catholic because suburban Detroit.
Right.
That's a lot of
that's the
what's
water.
Happening there.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So she was working at this Catholic church, and this is only when I was in like fourth grade or something, but noticed some stuff that was going on there, just like that wasn't okay. Nothing like the horrible things that we hear about in the Catholic Church now, but I think it was more just like some financial stuff that was being...
Sure.
Yeah, just what there wasn't a lot of transparency. So she called it out. I think she wrote like a letter to the editor of a local newspaper or something. I know.
Oh, right? That.
So she went for it.
Knowing your mother, not surprising. Not surprising at
yeah,
all.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So she did that. And then my dad is just this like guy who on the surface, it's funny, growing up, all my friends would say, man, your dad is like kind of intimidating. But then I never had that connotation at all, because my dad is the biggest softy in the world. Like, right. He'll start weeping over things because he finds them so meaningful and beautiful, and just
he's
like
amazing.
This 6'2", 6'3" Midwestern guy who's just like will break at anything.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that was a good combo. And then I think the book's dedicated to my grandfather on my dad's side, who is 91 right now and still very observant. And growing up, I just remember going to their house and be sitting in the back room, and he would just tell these stories about his life growing up and his brother and his travels out west. And he had this way of reflecting on things, like personal testimonial things that in any other circumstances aren't super extraordinary, but it's just somebody reflecting back on their life. But he did it in a way that was so beautiful and just kind of captivated you. And that, I think, led me to be like, well, there is a way to tell like a personal story that isn't necessarily extraordinary for any specific reason that can be captivating and can be moving. So that's why the book's dedicated to him, because really what I think that book is more than anything else is me attempting to tell my own story and not trying to act like there's something super unique or super profound about it, but more recognizing that there is a miraculous nature to common and everyday reality.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's great. So, okay. Now the other part of that question was about this whole deconstruction of your faith. And then this, now you're on this other side of it where you've kind of you're in the ongoing process of reconstruction and building something new and fresh and that is good for not only you, but the city you're in, your family, et cetera, right? So I guess for you personally, what were the things that seemed tough to move through, let go, get past, rethink, whatever it is, like that was the tough part. And then on the other side of that, it's like what now, which kind of leads into the, in some ways, the church that you're now the lead pastor of, like, how has that been for you to kind of reconstruct, build something new and in some ways different, but in some ways not so different, right? Like there's a little bit of, you know, this, yeah, we let go of some things and maybe some language, but then we also keep some things, but we just mean something different by the things we keep. But yeah,
I guess the one thing that remains continuous is that you have yourself through it all. And I think the biggest thing that's shifted is the perception of self and one's own ability and one's own, just the significance of one's own experience. I guess to back up from that, like the hardest part for me amidst the whole deconstruction, like I had grown up in a pretty large non-denominational church after my family left the Catholic Church. And I was pretty, I just lost interest with that by the time my senior year of high school rolled around.
Right.
But I was also committed to go to a place called Moody Bible Institute. and I didn't, but like,
we are not sponsored by Moody, by the way.
No. Well, that's good, because you wouldn't exist anymore. but I didn't. So when I committed to going there, I didn't have any idea what I was getting myself into, because all I knew was that I used to be Catholic and then my family went to a non-denominational megachurch that was not super into theology. So I didn't get that there's like Calvinism and all the you know, Arminianism and the whole scope of all that. And so I I guess I'll get to your question.
There's a lot. Yeah, because I mean, I guess what would be a funny question or interesting question to ask is like, what was the moment at, you know, Moody where you were like, oh shoot, what in what?
Oh yeah, well that's pretty easy to pinpoint. And it happened the first night I was there, which is great. But
nice.
So I was super like, I'm disenchanted with Christianity. The summer between my senior year of high school and my freshman year of college, and just, you know, doing like going out with all my hockey buddies, partying. And I hadn't really been doing any of that during, while I was in high school. And my mom took notice to this and she was like, hey, like, do you want to go to the bookstore? You could pick out a book and then we could just talk about it over brunch once a week before you move. And the book I picked out had a bunch of cool colors on it. And it was called What We Talk About When We Talk About God by Rob Bell. And yep. I didn't have any previous context with Rob Bell other than I think I knew slightly that at my youth group, he was kind of frowned upon, at least like post Love Wins Rob Bell. So I liked the angst tied to that. But so we start reading this book and I like was really tracking with it, really liked a lot of the things that it had to say. And I was like, man, everyone is posting on this Moody incoming freshman class Facebook group all their favorite books and what they're reading this summer. I think I should tell everybody about this cool book by this guy named Rob Bell. So ignorant at this point of any. And so my mom's like, well, like you should just wait until you get there and like have those conversations then.
Oh, bless your mom.
Well, at this point, I just have like unending respect for my mother. We're like, which is ridiculous. Ridiculous. Having brunch, just all these profound, wonderful conversations. Yeah. Anyways, fast forward to getting there. I'm moving in my stuff and some of my books. And at this point, I've accumulated a few more of Rob Bell's books. And I remember, so in Moody, Spokane, which that's a big part of the reason I wanted to go to Moody, is they have a campus out in the Northwest.
Right.
I remember one of my housemates, because you live in a house at that campus, doesn't exist anymore, but when it did, you lived in houses. And one of my housemates, we're all sitting around the table in the kitchen, and he turns to my RA and he says, what do you think of Rob Bell? And the RA responds with, well, I don't necessarily think Rob's going to go to hell, but I think he's probably going to lead a lot of people there. So
you were like, oh shoot,
where am I? And then tie that in with all my housemates who are good friends, but started setting traps for squirrels because they didn't want to buy food. It's just a wake up call. But yeah, so I think that is in terms of theology, I think right. That was the moment where I'm like, oh, wait a second. There's a pretty significant scope here that I was definitely oblivious to up until this moment.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Continue. Yeah. Right. So back to the...
Yeah. So back to like, that was, I think, the hardest thing for me because I like things to be fairly at equilibrium. Like I like being friends with people. I like having good relationships with them. And I think that year it was really hard to sit in class and learn all this stuff that I just like did not buy. And then going home, I would read up on all the counter arguments to things that my education was teaching me. And I've never been like a studious student. That's right. Redundant. But I've never been like that's not my thing. I would do the bare bones and kind of move on to the next thing or go do what I wanted to be doing. Right. So to have to spend all this time in class and maintain like at least a reasonable GPA so I could transfer somewhere else, and then also not buying any of it. So having to spend the time learning the counter argument was really hard. And I think the whole people pleasing piece, just all the conversations that I had that year. And again, everyone I live with, like I still maintain good relationships with most of them. Some I don't talk to anymore really, but like we were all friends, but the serious conversations of theology were just so, we were coming at it from such different places.
Yeah.
That was really hard to kind of have that dissonance.
Yeah.
Of just, how can we find equal ground here? And I guess to carry that thread along to like the silver lining of that, or is the dissonance piece of not being able to necessarily reach a consensus with people who you care about. I think that's just, that taught me the reality of what life is. Like yeah. There are a lot of these moments where there are people you love and people you care about, but there are dissonant things that are within those relationships. But how can you keep on pouring into those things all the same?
Yeah. And that's hard because you think that like, surely we can find common ground somewhere. And sometimes we find ourselves on the side of the coin where it's like, no, I will not find common ground with you on in this particular situation that we're in. And then other times you're like, I'm trying so hard to meet you close to the middle. And it feels like every time I get close to the middle, you move further back from the middle, right? And that's such a challenging thing because you're right. It's like, we have these friends, we have these family members, and it's like, we've kind of like had some experiences together. Like we've kind of lived through at least some things together. I don't want to think that like I have to let this go and move on. But like, unfortunately, sometimes that happens.
Yeah, and, totally.
And I love the language of sometimes, and this is weird, but I'm going to say it anyway, but what I would rather have is I would rather graduate from different relationships and different things than to have a divorce from something, right? I would rather to graduate out of that. Like, okay, we had a great time. This was an awesome experience, relationship, whatever, but now it's time for the next thing for me. And I don't want this to be a divorce where I'm mad and you're mad and we get pissed and both walk away. But unfortunately, I feel like a lot of us have had a lot more quote unquote divorces than we've had graduations. I don't know.
Yeah. I think that's a good way to put it. Because there is something, to be able to graduate is still to be able to maintain a sense of connection to what was. Whereas a divorce, there's just so much rawness to it that you feel like you can't even access it anymore, which,
that's
a good way to sum it up. For
that
sure.
Happens.
No, it definitely does. I think for me, it's been a gift to, as far as the family piece of this, they're right there with me. So I think that for a lot of people that I've talked to who have gone through the whole like deconstruction of their faith, the hardest thing for a lot of people is where their family's at compared to where they're at. And part of the reason why I feel like I've been able to keep on moving forward is that my family seems to be along for the ride, or at least those that really care about diving deep into theology.
Right.
Yeah.
So we shared a little bit about the deconstruction, but I think we still are missing that, like, what was one of the blocks, the challenges of letting go or thinking differently. Maybe not letting go is not the right word, but thinking differently. So I don't know if you've got one of those to share, and if not, that's okay. We may come back to it and we can move on.
So, like, are you thinking specific theological concept, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I think that's a nice place to go.
Yeah, well, it's unfortunately
it's a nice like place for me to go.
Right, exactly. Like I was saying, I didn't have much of a conception of theology up until that point. So like for me in high school, what theology was, and I'm sure, like obviously the guy who was speaking, I still am connected with him back in Michigan now. We went through a bitter patch for a while. I'm sure there was more of a point to just this in the moment, but for me, what high school, like what theology seemed like during my formative years, where this is why you don't drink, this is why you don't have sex, this is why our God is the best, and this is why you should invite people to this youth group. And so once you awaken to the fact that, well, there are many more things going on than just this, that quickly loses its luster.
Yeah.
So like for me, I never really built up a theology of eternal damnation. I never really built up a theology that was anti-LGBTQ rights. I never, I didn't, like women in ministry, I didn't build up a theology as to why that is something that some people wouldn't agree with. So
it feels weird to you that there are people who are so on all those things you listed, like are very, like they get riled up about it.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think if you would have asked me this when I was like a freshman in high school or a sophomore in high school, like I was pretty stupid and ignorant. And I think like I would answer some of those questions with a very conservative theological framework, but I'd have no reason as to why I was doing that other than people around me might've said the same thing. But I didn't have like that theological,
here's why.
Grip on something.
Yeah.
And which some people would argue, well, you still don't with your current theology. So. But that's like now, and I struggle with this because a big thing, we're, as far as I know, which we can get into this, but the church that I'm at right now, we're called Branches, is the only affirming church the only non-denom affirming church in Spokane. And like there, it's really hard for me to have a theologically based conversation with somebody as to why that's the stance that we take. Like that ship sailed so long. Like it's hard to go back to those places.
Right. Yeah. Right. Whew. Yeah. So Branches, that's a good place to start. That's a good place to go next. So how did you like win a game of rock, paper, scissors? Like how did you become the lead pastor of this church in Spokane, Washington? Did you have some dirt on someone? Like, what'd you do, Mike? Like,
gross. Featuring the Juice of Branches Patrick podcast. I don't know. We could
So I mean, like, you don't have to go like super deep, but like, I think that's, I mean, for some, it would be that is so interesting that I know that there are currently probably listening to this or hopefully listening to this. People who are in their, early 20s, like yourself, almost into your mid 20s, who would say, I would eventually love to be the lead pastor of a church, right? Of some type of community of faith. And it's like, here this guy is, like, he's doing it. And is that a church that is really doing some really unique, cool, kind of not only like just the affirming piece, but like you guys, when we've talked, you all are doing some other fascinating things that like would, send some people like, whoa, a church can actually do that. Like, especially with the giving piece of that, that I thought was really interesting. But talk about just the journey for you, even discerning for yourself, like, do I really want to take on this role of lead pastor of a church?
It all kind of, I guess, I mean, really what it was is right place at the right time or wrong place at the right time.
Depends on how you look at it. Sure.
Yeah. Exactly. Which that's a day by day thing for me too. Emily, my wife, as Pete Holmes would say.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Shout out to Pete.
Exactly. She had been going to Branches, and she invited me along before we were even dating. It's a really cool community. And then, so when we moved away, when we got married after we graduated, I had interned there my senior year of college. And then we were living in Tacoma, and we were kind of in a spot where we're like, well, wherever one of us gets a job first, let's go there because we need to survive. And Emily got a job back in Spokane, so we moved back here. And at around the same, so we moved back in September, and then in November, probably, the founding pastor, his name's Ryan Miller, he got coffee with me, and he's just like, hey, I'm meeting up with a few different people. I wanted to let you know that like I'm leaving Branches in January. January will be my last month. And I just figured I'd let you know because you've been, we've been close. So
right.
It's funny because before that meeting, Emily had joked. She's like, well, Ryan, maybe he's going to ask you to take over Branches. And we like joked about it because there's no reason for either of us to think that.
Right.
But at around the same time, my boss, when I was at Whitworth, had retired from Whitworth and had become the administrative assistant at Branches.
Uh-huh.
And she told me to like start thinking about some things you might want to say if you were hypothetically given the opportunity to do so.
Wow.
And so Ryan spent the last couple months kind of transitioning out. At that time, I was only, like I said, working part-time as a high school English teacher. And the board at Branches asked if I would be willing to kind of act as a transition glue guy, they put it. So my role was...
The language churches have.
So ridiculous.
Every church has like their own, you know, the church that I'm a part of, it's like, oh, you need to start shoulder tapping some people. I'm like, I don't want to touch anybody's shoulders.
It's
what are you
weird.
Talking about? And you're like, what are you, the glue? What do they call you? The
transition glue guy? Again, transition LinkedIn.
the glue guy. That sounds like a whole different thing.
I know. You're the glue guy. You can take that a few different ways.
Oh, boy.
Glue guy. Oh, boy. Mr. Elmers.
It's like, well, I do work in a high school. I do like glue. So,
it's true. Yeah.
Okay.
Sometimes when they're all taking a test, I'll put the glue between my fingers and hold them together and I'll peel it off. This is a fitting title.
Yes.
So, yeah, my role at that point was basically to do different meditations because we were going through, when Ryan left, we started going through just a rotation of speakers from the community, different people like, and professors and stuff around the area.
Right.
And, we were at a board meeting and they were talking about Easter and they're like, well, who should we get to speak for Easter? And Dana, who was my boss at Whitworth, who was still working there at the time as an admin assistant, was like, well, why not let Mike do it? I mean, he's been transitioning and all that. Give him a chance to get up there. And at that point we were averaging like 75 people per service. But then Easter, obviously you get a lot of people. And the first time I spoke was Easter and there were like a ton of people there and it was really nerve wracking. But I actually, this is a funny side story. I was really self-conscious about how wrinkled my shirt was. So one of the board members brought an iron to Branches and I took my shirt off behind stage and ironed it.
Good.
It's a weird side plot. So that went, I feel like it went relatively well. And then summer, I had a very nice looking shirt on. So
they were like, if his shirt was wrinkled, not the guy. You know what?
Absolutely.
Nicely pressed shirt.
Wrinkled like shirt, you still be the glue guy.
Yeah.
You still be gluing stuff together.
Glue, irons. This guy he has all his basic household utensils. I can get behind this guy.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Well, if I had a steamer, though, it would have happened right there.
Oh,
and then,
yeah, this guy.
Unfortunately. Yeah,
he knows about the Amazon picks. That guy we need.
Prime essentials. So, and the summer rolled around, and I was like, hey, I would love to be the pastor. I've been doing this for a while, and Transition Glue Guy has in its title a definition that is going to only expire with the more time that goes on. So
right.
They had a conversation about it. Here we are. And we moved locations too at around the same time. So it felt like a pretty good transition period.
So what have you learned about being a lead local church pastor? What's been the most surprising thing for you in doing this work now? Like, I'm sure you had some expectations and some ideas of what it might be like being an intern and kind of being, you know, around churches of different types for as long as you have. But what's been maybe the most surprising thing for you in this role that you've had for not too long, but long enough?
Yeah. There are a number of things. I was having a conversation with somebody who's been a pastor for quite a while, right around when this was all starting. And he was from the Spokane area, and he was telling me, he's like, there are so many varied pieces to this and so many heavy things and beautiful things and everything in between. But the one thing that you'll be able to hold on to amidst any of those moments is that what you're doing is meaningful. Yeah. And I'm a four on the Enneagram. So,
oh.
But yeah, coddle me. but I do.
So funny.
It's so gross, but funny. I crave meaning.
Right.
And I think that has been the biggest surprise to me is that it is really meaningful that like people, I don't know. I mean, you know it when you just, you know, right. You can know it in any way, but just the things that people are going through and how they invite you into it. And just, oh man, there's an author that I love named Brian Doyle, and he passed away a couple of years ago, but he talks about how there's a story in everything where we alert enough to catch it with our tender nets. And for me, I just, the overwhelming amount of stories that can exist in a congregation of 75 to 100 people is beautiful and heartbreaking and everything. And I think I expected that, but I'm surprised as to how alive that is, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It does. Yeah. And what's been I've never been to Spokane, Washington.
Yeah.
But I do desire to be there one day. Well, just to visit, right?
No, Spokane's cool. We're taking off the training wheels.
But I guess the question I would have, and I want us to take it somewhere else after this, but is what is it like? I mean, so I'll put it to you this way. People from the South and people for sure from the Midwest, I would say, but definitely from the South, probably have a perception and an idea of what trying to lead a church or be involved in church or what that looks like in a state like Washington State, in any of the cities that are in such a state. Because, you know, you hear, because people think about Washington State, think about Seattle, right? So I think that everything that happens in Seattle and all the kind of like vibe of Seattle is true of probably the whole state. Well, we know that's not true. And so of anywhere, right? And so I guess, what is it like, as you even brought up a little bit earlier, to be this non-denominational church that is, you know, affirming, that is, you know, I would probably say then it, because of that, a progressive church. Like, is it, do you find your community being received well? Do people like to partner with you all, other churches in town? Like, what is it like to be branches in the city that you're in? Like, what's that context like?
Yeah. It's definitely unique. And I know that that's like kind of a buzzword and could be thrown around. But sure. What I mean by that is that Spokane's so fascinating because you're right. You think of Washington and you think of just a forward thinking, progressive right. state, but Spokane, not really. I would say that like branches is definitely a really unique space for Spokane in that, yeah, we're a progressive church. I mean, we describe ourselves as a group of aspiring mystics like Jesus, and we right. strive to make humanity greater than ideology. But the demographic, I mean, so the Idaho Panhandle is, gosh, 30 minutes away. And
which, right, that's the first time I've ever heard that sentence in my life.
Oh, really? The Panhandle?
The Idaho Panhandle. I've just never.
Yeah. Oh, local lingo.
Ooh.
Welcome to Spokane. The Spokane cast featuring Nashville Pat and Midwestern transplant Mike.
Oh, that's good. But yeah, so back to the Panhandle.
Yeah, back to the Panhandle. The Panhandle, especially that area. So there's this place called Hayden Lake, which used to be home to this crazy large neo-Nazi compound.
Oh, that sounds delightful.
Oh, it's lovely. Just to be clear, no. All right, good. Covered that base.
Heavy sarcasm. But, no.
Exactly.
If you're if you are a neo-Nazi listening to this podcast, please stop and go to the police because you need to go to jail.
Exactly. Turn, no, but like, it's We could joke, but like some of my friends who like, and it's just disturbing. And there are three, I can't remember the website, but they kind of label on a map just different hate groups that are in your locale.
Oh, I think yeah.
Three within like a 50-mile radius of Spokane.
That's wild.
Spokane is like 88% white, and those hate groups are pretty adamant with keeping it that way. And it's pretty disturbing, quite honestly. I mean, it's definitely, again, it's shifting so much, and there's a lot of good happening in the city, but Spokane does have to have a lot of conversations, and there are like Whitworth and Gonzaga, and a lot of churches in the area are helping try and push those conversations forward. But it's a super unique place that is definitely more conservative leading, in a state that is definitely more, liberal. And so I think what you get with that is sometimes those conservative voices can be a little bit more agitated because they're surrounded by, you know, a state political system that doesn't necessarily represent them all the time how they would want to be represented. But Branch is, we try as best we can, like the phrase that I shared earlier, to put humanity before ideology. Yeah. So,
We're going to hold this up. Maybe we should, I think we're going to restart the call here. Don't stop recording on your end, but it's just like we're having some connection issues. But hold that thought. Start back with Branches once we call back. All right, that's good.
Okay. So.
Cool. Had some technical difficulties. We'll just pick back up where we left off. Yeah.
Where you remember what you were saying?
Yeah, so we were talking about Branches and just the whole, with being surrounded by Spokane, which is a more politically conservative, ideologically conservative, sometimes ideologically extreme within the Inland Northwest region. I think sometimes it's such a beautiful community in the sense that people are really trying to, you know, let go of their attachment to one specific ideology, namely Christianity. I'm generalizing here, but getting at something that is all inclusive of all humanity. And when you're with these people on a Sunday morning, it's like, man, this is awesome. Spokane's doing great. And I think sometimes it can be a little bit, it's just not totally real. Like, it doesn't represent, I don't think, the bigger reality of what might be happening in Spokane at large.
Right. Huh.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. So, okay. I'm trying to think I think that's it. That's all I want to do with that. I guess now I want to, I guess we kind of probably start landing
speed round.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That was kind of, it was in the zone and then I'm like,
phone cutting out.
So,
lost the flow.
No, we're going to get it back.
We'll get it back.
We're going to get it back.
Hop on that wave, Pat.
So here's I guess what I want to take us before we go to like a speed round is, you know, what, I guess you didn't really answer this question, but is there in a city like Spokane with the local churches, is there connection? Like, do you feel like you're this isolated island in a sea of like just other? Because I know there's probably a variety of churches that are in the Spokane area. Just what it sounds like is that you've got a lot of people who are kind of punching the card of showing up to some kind of church.
Yeah, but large church population.
Yeah, large church population. So, like, do you feel like, oh, there's that church, you know, do you feel some of that? Or is it more like, okay, we may not agree with them on all of the things that they do, but we still like to bring them in and partner and with this church in different ways?
Yeah, I think we'd be totally open to it. I don't think there's really an us versus them mentality.
Oh, that's good.
If there is, I'm not picking up on it.
You're not aware of it, right?
Right. There are churches, obviously, that I think are doing things that are damaging.
Sure.
But I'm not I'm not going to church shame in front of
branches. Yeah.
But yeah. And even still, I mean, one thing we moved from a very affluent part of the city, like north of Spokane, in a town called Meade, and we had this beautiful building and everything. And about a year ago, we moved down to a neighborhood called West Central, and it's historically kind of fluctuates, but quite often is listed as the most impoverished neighborhood in Washington.
Wow.
So big shift. I don't know definitively because it hasn't been said to me explicitly from anyone. I think there were some churches that were like, okay, what are you doing? Like, because they've been here. And to their credit, there are churches in this neighborhood already that are doing amazing things that have been, and like that's their heart. So I think when we move down, there's also this new development that's right on the edge that's like very, you know, nice. Uh-huh. There's some gentrification happening. So, and I think
there's
like from
gentrification
the outside,
happening?
Oh, yeah.
What?
Right? Oh, right. What a surprise. I think rightfully so. Like if I was in their position and I saw that from the outside looking in, I'd be like, okay.
Right.
Do you
right.
guys realize what this looks like?
Right.
And when we moved, a big part of our mentality was, okay, we're not going to try and create anything new in doing this. We're going to try and sit for a year, listen, hear what's already happening in the community and partner with that.
Right.
So I would hope, which I'd have to ask, I think that's built some credibility, and there are people doing like asset-based community development work, and Spokane Alliance, which is partnered with IAF, just different programs like that that we've been able to develop relationships with and start partnering with things that are already happening, as opposed to coming in with this, we're branches and we'll offer this for the community, because there's already so many attempts that have failed at that
right.
in a variety of cities. So,
okay.
But yeah, that's been a fun thing to learn from for sure.
Wow. Okay. Let's do a speed round. I think that was good little way. And I think this will take us in a nice way to end in our time together. Okay. So some of these will be quick questions that you can answer. Some of them may take you a little bit, but I think we'll have a good time. So the first one, this is coming in hot. So I hope you're ready for this one.
It's like 85 degrees where I'm sitting. So I'm definitely prepared.
So I want to know what's one thing people say about you that you don't think is necessarily true about you?
Huh. Man.
Yeah, I know.
No, I lost my train of thought.
I know. I gotcha. This is a gotcha podcast.
Yeah. Bingo. Caught on candid camera.
Yeah, but what's one thing? It could be, and this question is like, it could be a positive thing that people say about you that you don't think is true. It could be something that's negative they don't think is true. But what's something that you have heard people say about you that you don't think is necessarily true about you?
Yeah, I just don't know if people are being super transparent with me. that could be part of it.
Yeah.
People tell me I'm a nice guy. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
It's funny. I did this earlier. So, and this is so classic. Anyone who's familiar with it is going to be like, oh, of course he thinks that. But so I have some friends who are like, oh, like emotional Mike, like he's in his feelings. He's such a four. Which I'm like, I don't know. Like I do exist in that place, but I feel like I try and use that to create things, or I try and use that to spur creativity, and then I move on. So I think that sometimes people peg me as being a stagnant emotional overflow.
Okay.
They use that term. No, I'm just kidding.
they said exactly like that.
Everyone says
five
it, actually.
Times today. It's such a pain.
Wow. Okay.
No, so I think that might be it. I think that I do experience the world through my emotions, but I'm walking along.
Huh. Okay. Four or five bands that really kind of resonate with you. That could be, I don't have that like an order, could be bands that you think are your favorites, bands that are really speaking to your soul in a deep way. Like, what are the bands, the artists that you really kind of, that really speak to you and connect to you?
Yeah. So a big one in getting me out to the Northwest is a band called Blind Pilot. Based in Portland, maybe Astoria now. I don't know. They're great. Definitely have a nice Northwest feel.
Yeah. And they're great.
Yeah. I brought, the singer to Whitworth too, which was really cool. And like he's just a super good guy. And so they connect with me on a personal level of just, they kind of carried me through high school in Michigan. I still love listening to them out here.
So Blind Pilot, that's one.
Blind Pilot's one. I've seen Death Cab for Cutie a lot. I like them. They're definitely a go-to. I'm definitely going to forget some and be like,
that's fine.
In the world.
That's fine.
Let's see here. Gosh.
Got Death Cab? For Cutie.
Yep, Death Cab.
That's two.
Seeing Bon Iver in September for the first time.
For the first time.
Oh, man, you're in for a treat.
It's going to be
good. At the Gorge, which, have you guys heard of the Gorge?
Yeah, I've dreamed of going to the Gorge for years.
Yeah, I'm seeing Bon Iver there, September 6th, which the Gorge is this beautiful. I mean, it's not a Red Rock status, but
It's pretty close. They used to have a music festival called Sasquatch. Happened in the Gorge, and it just recently, it stopped maybe a couple years ago, but it's a wonderful space. I've always wanted to go, and I should have made the trip several times, but I just didn't, and now I'm gonna have to wait till something like Bon Iver playing there or somebody else that I really want to see.
Let's go.
But
let's do it.
Do it.
No, September, I think I'm 6th. I'm going to Red Rocks to see him.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry.
I don't understand how that affects.
Oh, sure.
At the Gorge.
Because the tickets for this show are going to be insane. Yeah, sure.
The Gorge show? No.
No. They're, I mean, the tickets Red Rock show.
Yeah, yeah.
They're going to be insane. Yeah.
Fair.
So.
All right.
Okay, so that's three. That's two more.
Tallest Man on Earth is another good one. Mostly because, super good folk music, but then you go to a concert and you're like, what in the world? Because have you seen him live?
I've heard of the shows. I've heard people talk exactly like you're talking about the shows.
It's unreal. He's just like sprinting across the stage, jumping up and you're like, this is not what I expected.
Well, it's similar to the National. Like, people listen to the National music and you're like, oh, this is what this will be like live, and you go see them live, and he's rolling around on the stage. He's like this eccentric front man, and you're like, this is not what I was anticipating. But yeah, I feel like that's a similar, there are bands that are like that, where it's like, do you listen to your music?
Where's the disconnect here, Christian? No, totally. So that was the first time, I've only seen him once. So the one time I saw him, the stage lights got dark, and then this crazy opera music came on. And then you see this like shadow of a figure behind the whole stage setup, running and just ballet jumping into the air. And then like he shoots across the stage, does the same thing. It was nuts. So
that's hilarious.
Yeah, he's great. And then lastly, Vampire Weekend. I could talk. We
didn't even get into it. Yeah,
I know. And that, like, some of the lyrics that are going on right now.
So what? So give. You can go one. You can go a mini dive on one set of lyrics. I'll give you that.
God, that's
I not, know. I know. Do it. This is it.
Oh, man. Okay. So we have a Branches newsletter, and I just made this the quote for today's newsletter.
Okay.
Because I think it totally sums up the disconnect between humanity and the religions that we try and embody. Anyways, I'll get to that. It's from the closing track, which is Jerusalem, New York, Berlin. And it opens with, I know I loved you then. I think I loved you still. but this prophecy of ours has come back dressed to kill. Three large stones on a mountain, three small holes in a field. You've given me the big dream, but you can't make it real. A wicked world, just think what could have been. Jerusalem, New York, Berlin. And so I read that as this prophecy of hope, of love, of us coming together.
Right.
Look what we did to it. And look how we used religion to completely annihilate people, people groups, and to isolate people groups. And like, I want to love this because I want to believe that it's built on, you know, ideas of hope and love. And I think I still love it, but look what it turned into.
Sure.
Yeah. That's a big one for me.
There you go. Okay. Give me some authors. Give us three books. I know this is hard for you, but three books you think people should check out, give a read.
Yep.
I just made it even harder. I gave you less.
But the Book of Acts. And I like 2 Corinthians.
Oh, no.
2 Corinthians.
Oh, boy. Yeah. But yeah, so give me three books you think people should
check out from their local library. Brian Doyle's A Book of Uncommon Prayer is a necessity, in my opinion, because the miraculous and the common, that's like my life goal, and Brian Doyle does it there beautifully. Upstream by Mary Oliver.
I knew she would make it in the list. She had to.
So 0-2 on authors I suggest being alive. so sad. But those two. And then, oh man.
I know.
It's fresh, so I might be biased. Flip-flop between his two novels because he only has two novels. But right now, because it's fresh in my mind, I would say The River Why by David James Duncan.
Okay.
Which is, if you're like in your early 20s, I'm not going to frame it like that. If you're kind of trying to figure out, well, what am I doing? It's a very good coming of age book.
That's good.
About fly fishing, but about a lot more than fly fishing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I guess the last question I'll ask is, if we're in Spokane, Washington, or in your part of Michigan that you're from, what would be some restaurants that we had to go to? Like, you've got to do, just give us at least one of the mainstays for you in Spokane and maybe one mainstay for you that was in Michigan. But what's like food? So give us some food. Rex. Yes.
I would say in Spokane, the staple, which is a good staple, is the Flying Goat, which it is a pizza place in the middle of a neighborhood, always have super good beer and super unique, funky pizzas. So the Flying Goat is a go-to.
Love it.
Yeah. And then in Detroit area, oh man, probably Anita's, which is in Ferndale, Michigan, and they have Lebanese food, which is super good. Like they have chicken shawarma and... Also, I mean, that's just the most generic thing I could think of.
Amazing.
That's what I get every time. But they're super good food. And they make fresh-pressed lemonade. That is very refreshing.
Oh, how delightful.
I know. There you have it. Fantastic.
Good. Well, how do you feel? I feel good.
I feel pretty good. Yeah. No, this was fun. Thanks for looping me in.
Yeah, I think you'll be back. I have a feeling. But
I'd love that.
Before we go, remind people of your book and where they can find it.
Yeah, the book is called Freeing the Firefly, and you can find it on Amazon. I would also, I think the hardcover is still available, but don't get it. Because I'm trying to take it down. It is pixelated and there are errors. So there you go.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
And if you want to wait like 3 to 10 years, you might be able to get one with a forward from Patrick Check.
Absolutely. Guaranteed. Yeah, guaranteed. Mike,
17th
thank you.
Edition. Yeah. Thanks, man. No, I'm all happy right. to do this. This is fun.
All right. We'll see ya.
See ya.
Peace.